The president, President Biden, recently had a meeting with labor leaders around the country, including Amazon workers. The importance of the White House stepping up in defense of union organizing.
Yeah, so the National Labor Relations Board has been much more receptive to charges being filed around unfair labor practices. They're also much more willing to use the 10J injunction to protect workers before the hearings are resolved. This is one of the things that we are both going to be filing ULP charges with the NLRB regarding our retaliation cases. And also we will be asking for 10J injunctions so that we will be reinstated while those cases go through the process. And this is something that the previous NLRB was not doing. And so we're grateful that there is a little bit of an opening for protecting workers. That being said, we do need to pass the PRO Act. We need to pass a lot of different legislation. We need to fund the NLRB more. The NLRB needs to get even more assertive in the sorts of ways that it is helping workers, because the laws are, as they are very broken. Now, Joe Biden has, did invite our president, Chris Smalls, to the White House. And Chris Smalls laid out the things that need to be done. If we can't get
the PRO Act. We have 10 seconds, Matt.
He needs to do something. If we can't get the PRO Act done, he needs to sign an executive order right away. We need help. All workers do.
Well, we want to thank you both for being with us, Matt Cusick and Tristan Dutchin, organizers with the Amazon Labor Union, who were fired this month after the first successful organizing effort in the company's history at Amazon's Staten Island JFK 8 warehouse. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8 a.m. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio with Paul Rowland.
Slouching towards Good morning, everybody out there in radio land, or computer land, or whatever device you might be tuned in to this program here on KBOO Community Radio. I'm Paul Rowland, your host for the next hour, and this is a live call-in program, and I'm sitting here in the inner southeast KBOO studios all by my lonesome. Well, actually, Ty is just across the window. He's running the board. Hi, Ty. Don't have a guest this morning, so we'd love to talk with you about matters of import. I would like to also mention, before I talk about that song and where it comes from and all the related subjects, that we are in our membership drive, our spring membership drive. And we are, a couple weeks from the end. We have these long, drawn-out membership drives, different from in the past. And if you are a regular member from a pre-pandemic listener to our humble radio station, you know, well, of course, you know that all the community and public stations operate this way. We usually have a very lively bunch of people in the back room here with a whole set of bank of phones, giving our number to call in to support the station for our membership drive, because we are a listener-sponsored, membership-driven station. That's how we've been going for 52, 53 years now. I'm losing track of time with this pandemic. Has that happened to you too? I tell you, it's wild and wacky times here. Anyway, so yeah, that's how we keep going. And, you know, as we talk about some of the things you heard on Democracy Now! And some of the things I want to talk about, the total twisting of reality, especially through social media, the importance of stations like KBOO, I predict, you heard it here first, are going to become more and more and more important as things spiral out of control, perhaps, if we let that happen. So we need to keep this station strong. We need to keep this station on the air. We need to expand our reach and our strength and our ability to get our message out there. Do you believe that? I know you do. If you haven't yet contributed to KBOO, to our spring membership drive, please, please go to kboo.fm. That is our website, kboo.fm. And click on that big donate button right there. Right there, it's obvious. kboo.fm, or you can mail us if you are not one of those who are hooked in to all the miracles of modern technology. You can simply mail us your check to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Please do that. And if you have one of those smart devices, you can text KBOO. Oh, gosh, I should look these things up before I talk. I believe it's 54321. Is that right, Ty? 54321?
Check.
Well, we're checking on that. I know I should have this stuff memorized. Anyway, go to kboo.fm, click on the donate button. I tell you, things are going to get really crazy. If you are not crazy enough already, we are not out of the woods yet with this Trumpist stuff, with the slide into fascism. We are not out of the woods. We got the midterm elections coming up. You know, I really have this feeling that we don't understand exactly what's coming at us. So we need to get with it, folks. And one of the ways to get with it is to support this station, which, to the best of our ability, tells the truth, at least gives a platform to people who talk about real things. All right, so I'll be talking about that again before the end of the hour. We just heard Eliza Gilkison at the outset of the program from Roses at the End of Time with her piece Slouching Towards Bethlehem. I was just looking up that phrase. Of course, I knew it came from the W.B. Yeats poem, The Second Coming. Of course, Joan Didion did a collection of essays many decades ago with the same title. And actually, Joni Mitchell put the words to The Second Coming by Yeats to music. So there you have it. Slouching Towards Bethlehem. I just wanted to read this poem. If you're not familiar with it, it's there's a lot of phrases in there that you may have heard over the years. It's just chock full of, I guess you could say, kind of aphorisms. Yeats, what a great poet. The Second Coming, turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falconing. The falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart. The center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. I will bracket that. Maybe we'll talk about what anarchy is and isn't. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. The blood-dimmed tide is loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. Surely some revelation is at hand. Surely the second coming is at hand. The second coming. Hardly are those words out when a vast image out of Spiritus Mundi troubles my sight. Somewhere in sands of the desert, a shape with lion body and the head of a man, a gaze blank and pitiless as the sun is moving its slow thighs, while all about it red real shadows of the indignant desert birds. The darkness drops again, but now I know that 20 centuries of stony sleep were vexed to nightmare by a rocking cradle. And what rough beast, its hour come at last, slouches towards Bethlehem to be born. Okay, that's The Second Coming by William Butler Yeats. And that's kind of what I want to talk about, the idea of this, I've talked about the apocalypse, apocalyptic thinking over the years. You know, it's in our culture. Obviously, the Yeats referring to the second coming obviously refers to, you know, the second coming of Christ, but it has kind of more, in some ways, more pagan, deeper archetypal imagery. Obviously, the Sphinx is in there. The Sphinx coming to life. What does the Sphinx represent? And but obviously, the Christian tradition, the Book of Revelation, talks about monstrous imagery in the coming of the apocalypse preceding the return triumphant of Jesus Christ, that great myth that has sustained many and deluded many over the centuries. So I have this kind of conflict within myself on this program of, you know, wanting to talk about current issues, like we had Ray McGovern on talking a very contrarian to the dominant narrative view of what's going on in Ukraine right now, the historical backdrop to it, which isn't talked about in the drumbeat of, you know, not just supporting Ukraine, but now supporting the whole military apparatus, which is sustaining this war, which is, instead of actually trying to come to some sort of resolution, which McGovern felt and I feel was possible before the outbreak of hostilities, and would be more possible if we weren't so hell-bent on now talking, you know, openly about this being an actual proxy war, in needing to defeat Russia. Sort of the hidden agenda is actually coming out. So the voices that were talking about these things at the very beginning and were ignored and now are being drowned out by the very validation of what they were saying in some ways. Anyway, so I have a tension between talking about the important current events. You heard about what happened in Israel, the killing of a journalist. Of course, the Israeli Defense Forces have killed 55 journalists since the year 2000. Nothing new, but perhaps more blatant, given that she was also an American citizen. She was a well-known on-air reporter for Al Jazeera. Anyway, between talking about these important events and having guests on to talk about and interpret them and to analyze them, and talking about kind of the bigger picture, what brought us to this point? What's the sort of the deep picture, not the deep state, but the true history of colonization, exploitation, and oppression? And how can we have a common shared understanding of it as opposed to the terrible polarization and the lack of a shared reality, as the Filipina guest was talking about? Marcos coming back to power. If that's not slouching towards Bethlehem, I don't know what is. So in terms of the big picture, I wanted to read Freddie Perlman for some time, who uses very similar imagery. Freddie Perlman wrote a book called Against History, Against Leviathan, and a book called The Continuing Appeal of Nationalism. I wanted to read a little bit from, just because it's very poetic and it kind of continues in the theme from the Eliza Gilkison song and the poem by W.B. Yeats. In fact, there's actually a quote from Yeats in there. So this person, I don't actually have their name, actually typed out the entire book, apparently, Against History, Against Leviathan, which is a substantial book, and put it on the internet in chapters. So if you'll indulge me, and I don't know, maybe you don't have much choice, but you can call in and complain if you want it. 503-231-8187, that's the number to get on the air. Or if you want to continue along the veins of what I'm talking about. So, Against History, Against Leviathan, Freddie Perlman. And we are here as on a darkling plain, this is a quote, not his, swept with confused alarms of struggle and flight while ignorant armies clash by night. That's Matthew Arnold. Around the same time as Yeats, actually. Here, and then here's another quote, here one can neither stand nor lie nor sit. There is not even silence in the mountains, but dry, sterile thunder without rain. T.S. Eliot, another person of that same epoch, the early part of the 20th century. The darkling plain is here. This is the wasteland. England, America, Russia, China, Israel, France. And we are here as victims or as spectators or as perpetrators of tortures, massacres, poisonings, manipulations, despoliations. Hic Rhodus. This is the place to jump, the place to dance. This is the wilderness. Was there ever any other? This is savagery. Do you call it freedom? This is barbarism. The struggle for survival is right here. Haven't we always known it? Isn't this a public secret? Hasn't it always been the big public secret? It remains a secret. It is publicly known, but not avowed. Publicly, the wilderness is elsewhere. Barbarism is abroad. Savagery is on the face of the other. The dry, sterile thunder without rain, the confused alarms of struggle and flight are projected outward into the great unknown, across the seas and over the mountains. We are on the side with the angels, a shape with lion body and the head of a man, a gaze blank and pitiless as the sun is moving its slow thighs. That's another quote from the Yeats poem I just read. Is moving its slow thighs against the projected wilderness, against the reflected barbarism, against the savage face that looks out of the pond. Its motion is emptying the pond, rending its banks, leaving an arid crater where there was life. In a wonderfully lucid book titled Beyond Geography, a book which also goes against history, beyond technology, beyond civilization, Frederick W. Turner, not to be confused with Frederick Jackson Turner, the frontiersman's advocate, draws the curtain and floods the stage with light. Others drew the curtain before Turner. They're the ones who made the secret public. Toynbee, Drinan, Jennings, Kamaty, Debord, Zerzan, among contemporaries whose lights I've borrowed. Melville, Thoreau, Blake, Rousseau, Montaigne, Las Casas, among predecessors. Lao Tse, as long ago as written memory can reach. I'm just going to hold it there. We've got a couple callers. I don't know. Sometimes it's good to sort of shake things up a little, bring some more poetic, philosophical approaches to what's going on. Sometimes we kind of get trapped in our daily reality, the drumbeat of what's happening, and aren't able to shake our vision loose to see perhaps more deeply. So with that, I'm going to check out who we got. Oh yeah, I got a reminder from Ty. It is text KABU to 44321. I'm sorry, 44321. You can text KABU to 44321 and support this beautiful radio station. Let's go to Camilo first. You're up. Go ahead. Hi.
Good morning. I think that this theme is really topical, prescient, and critical. And it's one that's going to be very difficult to keep an understanding of what it is and what it is not. So what I'm referencing is the way in which people who try to tell the truth are distorted into, you know, criminals like Assange, like Norton in the NSF outing of how we are being surveilled. And I think we're going to see the same kind of thing happen to people like McGovern and Chomsky and these Nobel Prize winners who have revealed what is actually the process that we're living through. And I think that the theme is carried out particularly in climate change, where the people who are saying, look, the science is pointing to the inevitable collapse, are referred to as doomers and are dismissed. And I think it's so important that these exposures of how dangerous the circumstances are, how thin the ice is, are respected, because their message is not despair. It's possible to give this message and to respond with it not by giving up, but by recognizing the inevitable collapse means that we have to prepare for doing whatever we can to mitigate the worst, to make the failures not occur mainly in the global south and the poor and people of color who suffer the worst of the effects of these problems that the entire globe is facing. But there are things that we can do to try to create the transition with justice and fairness. And that's going to become harder and harder to do, because as you see, the tools are in the hands of the oligarchs, and the truth is being completely distorted. So that's my input.
Okay. Well, thank you for that, Camilo. The power of, I mean, Elon Musk buying Twitter, the power of Facebook. You heard the Filipina journalist talking about how Cambridge Analytics used the Philippines as a quote petri dish for their experimentation. And of course, Cambridge Analytics was basically was the forerunner of what was used, you know, to elect Trump. Basically, the use the use of social media to have these proxy accounts to repeat endlessly the same memes, the same themes, to, you know, kind of find locate key influencers. That whole model was developed, and kind of Philippines was used as a petri dish, as she said. Can't remember her name right now, but and why don't we, people are using this as a meme, as a Facebook theme, that why don't we call our own billionaires oligarchs? Why are why is that reserved to Russia? The idea, I guess it almost kind of goes back to the czar, the idea of the czar and feudalism. Anyway, there's also a book called Techno Feudalism that kind of gets into all this, the way that capitalism has mutated into these behemoths, these huge corporate structures that are no longer operating on the old capitalist productive model, but more on a feudal model where we're all the serfs, the techno serfs. Anyway, I might look that article up. But we got a couple other callers before I continue to go on here. We got Molly up. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Yes, this is Molly. And first of all, I want to thank you for this great program that's on right now and the great poem by W.B. Yeats that you chose, because I have always been very moved by that poem. And I appreciate being able to call in. I certainly donated for this fund drive that's happening now, because I've been a KABU member for years, but I really appreciate, for one thing, being able to speak in a democracy. So I just want to I'm going to read a short poem that I wrote I dedicate it to, it's the second coming after W.B. Yeats, but I want to quickly just say where this poem came from for me personally. I was watching CNN a couple of days after the invasion of Ukraine, and the people were in such shock, and how can this be happening in the 21st century? I mean, we all are still in shock of that, I think. And CNN Cooper was interviewing a woman with her children down in one of the bomb shelters. Her husband, she stayed to be with her husband, who was out there on the front lines, and he had gotten very scared, close call, and come down into the bomb. She was holding her baby, and Anderson Cooper was interviewing her, and the baby was so cute and cheering everybody up down in the shelter. Let me not go on and on too much here, but he asked her, well, what will you tell your baby after this is all done, your beautiful baby? And she said, I'll tell her that she's the most beautiful baby in the world. And Anderson Cooper was so struck, because he said, well, I have a baby, but your baby is definitely the most beautiful baby in the world. So now I'll just read this poem and then get off and allow other people to talk. The Second Coming after W.B. Yeats. The camera focuses in on the bright eyes of the most beautiful baby in the world. Held in the arms of her motherland and father, together a future gyrating from a past unforgotten. Spiritus Mundi arising from the cradle, rocking cradle of civilization in a civilized world. A Ukrainian mother holds her daughter up to the lens for all the world to see. Ramparts of grain surrounding, manna of sunflowers tall as trees. To flee is to keep running, and to be on the run forever wandering, a fugitive without a homeland. You cannot break bread and break a nation. The most beautiful baby in the world is looking out at you with clear, bright eyes into the future, conceived out of the darkness of the past and this moment on the clock ticking each second coming. Thank you for allowing me to read my poem to the public. I will get off.
that fit right in. Thank you, Molly. Appreciate that. I do want to mention that, there's the focus on the terrible humanitarian crisis which this war in Ukraine has precipitated. I mean, how you you can't argue with it because obviously it's a horrible, I mean, it's unimaginable to be living through that kind of hell. It really is. It shouldn't be happening. But what does that mean? It shouldn't be happening. It means nothing. I mean, we're obviously unable to control events, but what was really behind it? I don't know if it's a cynical use of those images, you know, of that beautiful baby, you know, because, you know, Anderson Cooper, I kind of like Anderson Cooper, you know, they do some good work on CNN, but they're devoid of talking seriously about the deeper historical background to the war in Ukraine. I mean, what Ray McGovern was talking about. I mean, is it true or is it not true that we're still treating Russia as if it was the Soviet Union? There's still something going on there. There's still, you know, obviously, you know, Putin is not Lenin. I shouldn't even talk about this probably. You know, I don't know what formed, you know, the psycho-political ideology of Vladimir Putin. I don't know what his long game is. I don't know, you know, I don't know if he still has any residual belief in the ideals as opposed to, you know, the sordid reality of the communist regime that ended up being imposed on the Russian and other people in that part of the world. You know, I don't know if he has some ideals of real social justice, of real redistribution of power and resources and money. It doesn't seem like it. It seems to me from a distance, it seems like he's, you know, bought into the capitalist game. It's like, if you can't beat him, join him, you know? I mean, but then again, look what we did. We sent in with all barrels blazing to rip whatever was left of the good aspects, you know, the fact that you really could have a guaranteed place to live, guaranteed job, guaranteed health care. You know, is it possible to have a nation state in which you can have those things and, you know, personal individual freedom, the ability to create without, you know, the state breathing down your neck? I don't know. Is it? Those are important questions. We certainly don't have both here in this country. We have a capitalist dystopia with the veneer illusion of freedom on it. And, you know, there is kind of, I guess, the opposite in some ways in the Soviet Union and in China. You know, there's a strange sort of historical dialectic going on there. Anyway, but, you know, I don't know if Putin, you know, I don't know what he believes, but he definitely, there is a reality to the idea that there's reasons why Putin was acting the way he does. Basically the saying, like, a caller called him a nut. You know, people call him a madman or whatever. It's the same kind of rhetoric that we always use to justify wars. And of course, you know, Putin has his own disinformation game going on. Of course, that's true. You know, but we have to suss out the realities, the actual framework that set up the situation. Anyway, I'm going to stop talking. And let's hear what Edie has to say. Edie's gone. I've talked too long. The number is 503-231-8187 to call in. I'm Paul Rowland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're about halfway through. I started off by playing a song by Eliza Gilkison called Slouching Towards Bethlehem, which is that kind of comes from the end, the final line of a poem by W.B. Yeats. I don't know, what do you think about it? You know, we had a Ray McGovern on last week. I really do believe that there's too many people are caught up in just looking at with a sympathetic eye to the Ukrainian people, which is only half the story. The other half of the story is that NATO was an instrument of Western capitalist imperialism. You know, that's, you know, and why did the Soviet Union even come to be? It was because of the capitalist system, a reaction to the capitalist system. Was it a good or great or the best reaction, a alternative to the capitalist system? No, as it turns out. But the stage was set by this a vicious, all-consuming, competitive, world and soul-destroying economic system, which allows certain individuals to ruthlessly grab power, ruthlessly amass more resources than they need or deserve, and shut other people out, and force other people to live, frankly, miserable lives. And that's the nature of the system. So now there's been reactions and counter-reactions, and looks like we've got a couple more callers. Let's see who we got up next. Go ahead, you're on the air, whoever you are. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, it's you.
Oh, okay. Well, my name is Elliot, but Pacifica, and Cable was a Pacifica affiliate, has an obvious and tremendous problem with gerontocracy. All these stations were formed in the 60s, and if you went back to, you know, the old tapes and the Pacifica archives, in the 60s and the early 70s, most people on the air were quite young. And it's almost as if these hippie baby boomers just got hold of Pacifica and decided to stay with it until the day they die, because there are all kinds of people in their 70s and 80s who are dominating the Pacifica stations.
So are you? Is this a criticism of me? Is this a criticism of me specifically?
Why the young people don't even want to be on Pacifica.
So is this a criticism of me in particular?
No. Not.
Well, I'm not sure.
You're on the young side for Pacifica.
Well, we're not actually a Pacifica station.
Well, I know you're a Pacifica affiliate.
And you're right. So I don't know. It's a kind of a broad. It's kind of a broad charge that you're making. And,
but it's true. It's demographically true. And
actually,
and
you know, actually, our staff here is actually rather on the young side, for one thing.
You actually brought in. You seem to bring in some younger people for the new, you know, volunteer coordinator, a couple of other positions. If they could actually recruit a new generation with new ideas, that, you know, would be good. But, I mean, I just heard, you know, Chomsky and Dan Ellsberg, you know, debating on, KPFK, or at least as a rebroadcast. It's as if, the baby boomers, with the help of Medicare, you know, just, you know, want people to give a lot of money to Pacifica so they could stay on the air till the day they die. And I don't think that's a way forward in terms of substantial substantial innovative social change. I mean, there were young people rioting in the streets of Portland, largely out of frustration with Trump a year and a half ago. But for some reason, those people don't have strategic ideas that they will formulate verbally and, you know, want to have shows to discuss how to make social change. They just seem to want to riot.
I don't know. Again, that's a fairly broad statement. It would have to actually have some, you know, to actually hear their voices. And some of them...
Well, maybe recruit some young people to be on your show and to say why they don't have new ideas.
Fair enough.
Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you. I would have liked to... If your Elliot's statements were maybe a little more specific, but I think there's some validity there for sure. I mean, as a person who's actually 63 years old myself, I'm not sure I'm on the younger side of anything at this point. Yeah, I don't know. There's the whole idea of younger people and radio is a fraught question. I know that people, you know, this is a subject that's been probably every community radio in the country. Public radio is another question. I'm sure it's similar things going on there, but has been grappling with, you know, there's the whole turn to social media, which we were talking about in a terribly negative light earlier, and I do view it in a negative light, but, you know, there's a generation or two of people who've grown up really without listening to terrestrial radio. If they listen to it, maybe they listen to it on a, you know, on a smartphone or a tablet or whatever. So, you know, people are not, the presence of community radio, the importance and presence and influence, frankly, of community radio in a city like Portland has in some ways diminished. Of course, there's also, you know, there's also X-Ray FM, which is, you know, in some ways a competitor, certainly in terms of, you know, listening time to KBOO. There's some micro powered stations. You know, people are listening to podcasts. So yeah, I mean, this is an ongoing discussion. It's not, you know, the idea of a gerontocracy has some validity, but anyway, I think it's an important discussion. I did actually have some much younger co-hosts, if people remember, 2-3 years ago. There's various different reasons why that's not happening anymore. I personally regret it. I really liked having co-hosts, but also having younger people as co-hosts. I thought there were some very, very important voices. And, you know, frankly, the pandemic has really done a number on all of us, including KBOO. And, you know, as we come out of it, hopefully we don't have a fourth or fifth or whatever wave we're at, as some people are now predicting for the fall, which we do have to take seriously as we're thinking that this pandemic is over. Anyway, it's an important, but I would like to see more people involved in KBOO. And, you know, I don't really, it's hard to know what's going on with KBOO because we don't, you know, I don't do the Zoom stuff that much as I should. You know, we're still not fully open. Our doors are still locked. We only have a few people in for live shows, including this the morning talk shows. You know, I don't know where that's at. You know, we've also had a crisis in terms of the staff positions. There's been a number of staff positions that have gone unfilled. We do have a volunteer coordinator finally. We're looking for a station manager. But so there's a kind of multiple intersectional crises or issues, I should say, going on. And but I think we've weathered things well. I think, you know, we're still on the air. We're still got a strong programming. And I think we really need to strengthen what we're doing here at KBOO. So I guess before we go to Robbie, our next guest, our next caller at 503-231-8187, I just want to remind people this is our spring membership drive. And, you know, since we're talking about community radio, Elliot brought up, certainly there's need for changes, there's need for all sorts of things, but there's a basic need just to keep it going, frankly. You know, if we're going to make any, you know, whatever, however it's going to develop, evolve, change, whatever, it's. I think we need to recognize the serious importance of community radio. As I said, it's going to get more and more important as, you know, as things get weirder, frankly, and not in necessarily a good way. You know, I think we're going to see more of, not less of, what led up to the January 6th riot, insurrection, whatever, at the Capitol. I think, as I said, Trumpism is not over. Certainly Bidenism is not a good antidote. I'll just say that, frankly. I think he's actually a very, not the strongest figure we could have right now, you know. I will rally provisionally against the certainly against the rabid Republicans who are really trying to lead us to a even worse dystopian nightmare of social control and you know, white supremacy and patriarchy. And I don't want that. I don't think, you know, I don't see the Democrats rising, making a serious challenge. I think they're losing, as they have continually, as, you know, Chris Hedges has talked about in his book, The Death of a Liberal Class, as he talked about on the few chances he gets to be on our airwaves. Anyway, let's just go and hear what Robbie has to say. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Paul. I love the show. I love the topic. I kind of wanted to address one thing that the last caller had mentioned with the young people. They're all on the internet. They're not listening to AM, FM radio. They're on podcasts, and they're on YouTube, and they're listening to all those influencers, which I'm not really into either. I think that they have their own problems. I'll get into, you know, now, which is I am very concerned about how I watched this. I don't know, I guess maybe the activists amongst the left over here went so quick from being, I don't know, I can't, it's hard for me to follow this Ukraine war, because what I saw was Eric Prince with Blackwater in Ukraine, and the summer before Russia randomly decided to be an aggressor and just randomly decided to take all this, you know, randomly did this aggression, which I don't believe is so random. I think that America has been doing this proxy war. I think Lockheed Martin had a stage for Joe Biden in Atlanta, Georgia a couple of weeks ago. I think that this is all for money, and it's sad watching how our the side that I'm supposed to support, the side that, you know, I have friends on, the side that are considering themselves these social justice warriors, supporting the war machine. I have no idea how, but I mean, at the same time, this is exactly what propaganda does. It fills our TV screens with Russia, or I should say Putin being the bully. Putin's a bully. That was rhetoric over and over again. And anybody who's observed the war machine and how they demonize the one person, and you could go around in anywhere and ask somebody what the thing about Putin, like, oh, he's a bully, he's trying to, I don't know what Putin's, and we all have this idea, like, we know what Putin's doing. But meanwhile, nobody's talking about the fact that Blackwater was there with over $1 billion the summer before the invasion, trying to make a private army. Nobody's talking about the vast amounts of money that Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman were putting into Ukraine, or how John McCain helped do the 2014 color revolution, the Madras. Like, we had John McCain in Ukraine in 2014 supporting this regime now, the Ukraine nationalists, you know, and so it's just so weird for me watching how these, so I don't really think the young, I don't know, I can't trust anybody, because I feel everybody is victim to this propaganda. I don't think people are talking about how the DNC had a lawsuit filed from the FEC, the election commission, fined the DNC for election campaign finance problems. They sued the Hillary Clinton campaign in 2016. These are all stuff that the Democrats don't talk about, and I find it very concerning, because here I am, I'm an anti-war activist. I'm not going to be saying I support Ukraine simply because I see America's hand in this. Yeah, I'm against Russian imperialism too, but I'm not going to fall subject to this idea that, you know, like, oh, gas prices are going up and that's okay because this is what the price we have to pay for, you know, the war with Ukraine, which is an entirely fabricated message that the fossil fuel industry is pushing out to help support this war, you know, initiative. But I just don't think that people have the attention span to even begin to understand how much propaganda is coming through our TV screen. Because as you said, Chris Hedges, he's been kicked off everywhere. Lee Camp has been kicked off. Anything considered pro-Russian TV or media has been literally getting just blocked off our airwaves. And so I don't understand how people can think we have an idea about what's going on when we are subject to probably the heaviest propaganda I've ever seen in the past 20 years.
It's a sordid situation, let us say. And I think, let me get back to, I know you've talked about the, you know, where people are still talking about the summer of 2020 protests, which did seem to go on interminably here in Portland, and was very kind of a bubble phenomenon in that, you know, most of us older folks who don't stay up till midnight didn't go near those things. And so it was a kind of a self-perpetuating dynamic. But I think back to the whole idea of like radicalization is something I think about in terms of, you know, if you study like the 1960s and the sort of how the left kind of splintered into factions, and out of which emerged, you know, in terms of the cutting edge of the anti-war movement, anti-imperialist movement, you know, the Weather Underground emerged out of that, and I think ultimately didn't have a positive impact, but a lot of people tend to blame the Weather Underground. I guess I'm drawing an analogy between, and maybe this shows my age or whatever, between that phenomenon and the young people, mostly young people, I don't know, I like I say, I didn't really interact with them, who are engaged in the nocturnal, mostly nocturnal activities. And still now they're sporadic. There's another kind of, I guess what, you know, a lot of people see as a rampage with broken windows and stuff. And one of the graffiti that happened in reaction to the, you know, the leaked Supreme Court upcoming decision, which seems like they're heading towards overturning Roe v. Wade, a dismal prospect as well. And I one of the things I noticed was a phrase that libs something, meaning liberals, basically, you know, they're seemingly mostly anti-Trump, but I think there's a really strong component of the young people basically not trusting, you know, what Chris Hedges called the liberal class, because of their continually unwilling to take seriously the kinds of things we're talking about here. The fact that we live in a I forget what Ray McGovern called it, the beyond the military, the military industrial media, et cetera, it's an academic, a micmac, I think he called it, complex, that we're immersed in the belly of this beast. And we can't, like you said, and now with social media amplifying it, we're so immersed in it, it's like a house of mirrors. And so, yeah, it's no wonder that people, that's young people who see their future being destroyed by climate change, you know, Trumpism, et cetera, and they see that people don't have the courage, the Democrats, the liberal courage, don't really have the courage, don't really even have the convictions, as Yeats was talking about. They don't have the passionate intensity needed by having real convictions, maybe even having a real world view. I'm sorry to be so extreme here, that they, you know, they fall back on themselves and they kind of radicalize themselves, and they that's what happens, and they sort of become detached from. But you know, there is no real movement at this point. I mean, let's face it, there is no, you know, there's nothing like what happened, you know, in the 1960s. Not even anything like happened against the two Iraq wars, where you had tens of thousands of people in the streets. Anyway, it's hard times. I'll give you the last word, and we're winding down here. Go ahead, Robbie.
Okay, yeah, thank you. I just wanted to say that, yeah, I think there's the word is reactionary. It's people with good intentions that haven't paid attention the entire time. They don't know the full picture. And so any little thing, they react to it, and they're reacting to it, and they're not looking at a larger thing. I'll end it with this one story really quick. But I think there's good types of work that they do. There's good type of, like, Occupy ICE. That worked. We shut down that facility for like almost, you know, a month or so before they sent special forces out, and that was something that did something. What we have now since the 2020 protests, and I was out there for the majority of the time, but I just saw so much troubling stuff, and one of which is, you know, the amount of like, they were like, okay, so here's something very interesting. There's a local politician named Dan Ryan I don't particularly care for the person, but apparently his house was vandalized because he voted to defund, he voted to not defund the police. So here's the irony I want to put into perspective for everybody. Here's somebody who didn't vote to defund the police. So you're mad at him, all right? They go and they vandalize his house, cause like $4,000 or $5,000 worth of damage. And that just solidifies his very point. You know, I mean, you know, it's like you go out there and you do this, and then you're working against your own cause. But that's something that they can't understand because they're reactionaries. But, you know, Occupy ICE, which was started actually by older women went out there and they locked themselves to the ICE encampment and they started that. So I actually think that age shouldn't really play a part in this. It's just people who are paying attention, and we got to make sure that what we do in terms of activism is long run, not this short gratification, you know, instant gratification of, you know, bashing out some, you know, politician's window just because he voted for something. You know, it's not helping the cause, but I'm not going to sit here and try to, you know, police anybody. I'm just saying in this long run, I think that the side, the activist side, has lost perspective. I think we're supporting the big pharmaceutical campaigns. I think we're supporting the big war campaigns. I think that the left is supporting censorship, which is the double-edged sword.
Okay, Robbie, we do have another caller, so I just want to give them the last couple minutes.
Hey, okay. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Yeah, thank you, Robbie. I think that's an important subject, but let's go to Mary. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey. Hi. I agree with everything that Robbie said. I usually do agree with everything that Robbie said. And the other thing I think is maybe we should stop apologizing for our age. Older people, it is. It is about how you think and how you've always thought, and if you've been the same. So whatever your beliefs were, if you were believing things in the 60s and whatever, and then the 70s happened because things did not happen. The government got in, shut it down. So then we had the 70s, which was nihilistic because people get unhappy that what they really wanted, they did not, they weren't able to get. But I've been noticing, yeah, that I don't want KABU to be under the umbrella of all the other little radio stations. And that seems to be happening. So when I was really ill, I had to go back to where my parents lived, and that was in Bloomington, Indiana. And I was listening to the radio, and it was a local college station, and they had all these sort of programs that were national, and now KABU has the same ones. But also, and then Democracy Now, that everybody seems to be, it's like their religion with Amy Goodman. She is now putting on their Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, which was a think tank started by Soros and Koch. So that's what's on Democracy Now. We are listening to what one of the Koch brothers, and there's only one because the other one died. So we're listening now to what
okay,
he has.
Okay, you brought up a lot of stuff. We're out of time, actually, Mary. That's an interesting thing. It's worth a whole program.
Okay.
As I say, please don't come up with these vast subjects at the very end, but that's
no,
okay.
No, the whole thing is vast. The whole
I know,
thing is
it's
vast.
True, so it's
we
true.
Just keep,
well,
we
you know,
keep
Quincy, I actually like some of those people. I will look into that a little more. They're an interesting, you know, they're an interesting group. They're not, it's not uniform what they say. There's a lot of differences between them, but I will look into that Quincy Institute.
Yeah, and also, you know, the other one that changed was The Intercept. So that's also changed a lot.
All right.
So we just have to be very, very careful.
Okay, I got to let you go, Mary, because I got to remind people. Thank you, Mary. I got to remind people that you have an influence with your money to keep us going, first of all, and, you know, to get involved. I'm hoping we're going to be able to open up back up and, you know, have people come in and interact again and, you know, have open public meetings and all that. But, you know, you're used to Zoom probably more than I am. So you can still be involved. Anyway, I got to get out of here. 544-3221. Text KABU to 44321. Go to KBOO.FM. Support this powerful little station. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye, everybody.
What kind of bees come slouching?
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 9 a.m.